Good evening, everybody. It's Thursday, October 6th, and this is the National Liberty Alliance safety meeting. 909. Okay. I'm going to go into... Everybody's got to mute out. Let me mute everybody. I can unmute myself. There's a lot of noise out here. Okay, so it's now Thursday, October 6th. Time is marching on. John is still not feeling well. Hopefully tomorrow he'll do some more checking to find out what's going on with him. But, you know, he got feeling good for a day or two and then kind of relapsed back in. So just still under the weather, whatever he's got's hanging in there. So we'll just go ahead. I don't know if anybody's got anything special. You know, this is the Committee of Safety meeting. Time is marching on. I don't know how much time we got left. We need to get our boots on the ground because this thing will not go unless you're talking to people. Of course, I have the same problem you all do because between work and everything, you know, you got to make time to get out there and get on the phones with people. And it does take time and it takes some resources, but that's what's necessary. I mean, this nation is in trouble. I mean, it's not any less. It gets worse every day as far as what I can see. But, I mean, not to say that there's not some silver linings out there, because there is. And there is people waking up. But, you know, that's why everybody needs to get out and talk, because the timing is perfect. And there's many things going on right now that we need to jump on, and you're going to need your committees of safety. God forbid, you know, if something happens, you're going to be stuck in your community. So you want to be, you want to make sure that you have a face and a voice, and that they know who you are, because it makes it very much harder for people to follow ignorant, stupid orders when you have a face. If you're a brainless, faceless person, and you never stick your head up, and you never go to any meetings, and you never talk to anybody, when it comes time for them to push you out of your house, whatever other kind of crazy thing that they think they're going to do in the name of protecting us, they're going to have a lot less trouble doing it. You know, you become vocal then, and then it's too late. So let's get those relationships going now. Even with the sheriffs, look at I. If you can't work with the sheriff, you want to know that. That's the whole point of visiting with the sheriff. Look, you either got a good guy or you got somebody you need to get rid of. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, sheriffs are an integral part of this. And so it's necessary to engage them. And if you can't engage them, then find somebody else. And the other thing is sometimes you don't have to look very far for a sheriff, because you have an undersheriff or somebody else that's chomping at the bit for the job. And, you know, if you go in there and you reveal that this guy is not a constitutionalist, that he's doing things wrong and outside the Constitution, sometimes the sheriff or the next guy that's in line that has a taste for it, you give him the courage to step up, and you can kind of mentor him then and sort of push the dialogue and the issues of the elections, you know. And right now, we're having elections. I don't know what's going to happen after these elections, if we get to them, but I don't think it's too late to bring that dialogue in, you know, and at least for your own benefit to know where your sheriff stands and where the people in your county stand. And look, at committees of safety were formed outside of the county government, because the county government locks people out, and you know they do that. And so that's what we need to be doing. We need to be having these meetings, and we need to be setting up contingency plans for our communities. Nobody knows your community like you do and your neighbors do, and that's the way we want to keep it. So if anybody has anything that's beneficial to this process, I mean, we had a pretty good meeting last week. We had a lot of people that were moving and shaking and networking in their sister counties, and that's important, especially in the sparsely located counties, you know, developed counties where there's not a lot of people per miles. It's going to be necessary to get to know your sister counties and kind of work so everybody's on the same page. The only difference in the less populated ones, well, guess what? You got less people to convince, don't you? And it's easier to take over a political subdivision, you know, if you stick together and get together. That's kind of like with the, I don't even want to mention their name, but there was a group of people that went in these western towns and they brought their families and their extended families, and they took over the town because, you know, some of these towns out there had populations of, you know, 450. So it didn't take them very much to go out and vote and get elected to the key positions and take over the town. I mean, imagine if you could control your town government with people of your like minds. What a dream that would be. So, and you can get out there and do these committees of safety and get to know people and actually make a difference. And that's what this is about. Look, our forefathers wouldn't have joined committees of safety if it wasn't important to the effort. And we're like right back into the same problems they had back in 1776. You know, there's nothing new under the sun. The Patriot Act is not new. It was going on back then. You know, we have to deal with it. And the way you deal with it is by communication. And that's the other thing, communication. You know, this whole ham radio thing is great for breaking open in the committees of safety with those people that are into ham radios and communication. It's all about communication. This whole business is communication. But if we don't communicate, they're going to do what they want with us. You got to have voice. Yeah. If you don't communicate, they will dictate. Very good, Thomas. That's my son. Anyway, I don't know if anybody else has anything. Feel free to jump in. We don't have to get real long. We should keep this meeting into an hour if we can. We went longer last time because there was some good stuff coming on. I don't know who all is here, but I see we have New Jersey. Terry is there. Open, you got something to say there, Terry?
Yeah, I do. I sent you and several members of the NLA an article that appeared today in the Bergen Record, which is an attack on the Oath Keepers. And I just want to read the headline and my response. It says, Representative Scott Garrett campaign said Thursday it did not know in advance that a breakfast talk he gave at a River Ed diner last week was promoted by a Bergen County Republican leader active in a group called Oath Keeper that state officials say has connection to militant extremists. I'm sure that sounds familiar to you. Here's what I said to him. Because most of these comments here were against Garrett. So I said, the New Jersey Department of Homeland Preparedness is run by a former CIA political propagandist by the name of Dr. Christopher Rodriguez. Mr. Rodriguez got his doctorate in political science. He's a professional propagandist. The CIA is a real terrorist organization involved in terrorist bombings and assassination throughout the world. Look up Operation Gladio and find out who the real terrorists are and their fellow travelers.
Well, you just went on the list. Go ahead. That's good.
That's okay.
No, it is okay. Look, if you're not on the list, you're not a friend of mine. How's that?
Yeah. Right. That sounds good.
Go ahead. I'm sorry I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's basically it, is that, you know, they're attacking this congressman for a meeting with Oath Keepers. And I just thought that was kind of ironic because, you know, the ones who aren't keeping their oaths are the ones attacking them. And, you know, it just
stinks. Who was the Oath Keeper that?
Ed Durfee.
Ed Durfee. I don't know if I know him.
Yeah, well, he's in New Jersey, so.
Oh, maybe I don't know him. But, you know, I don't know. It's like, a lot, you know, all they do is throw stones and mud, and you have to respond to that when they throw something like that out, because it's very easy to respond to. It's all unsubstantiated bullcrap is what it is, and it begs a response, and I feel bad for Oath Keepers because it's in no small part due to their fearless leader, Stuart Rhodes, who kind of like believes that the only answer is revolution and bloodshed, and that's unfortunate, you know. And so that ends up resonating down through the group. And look at, there is a place for revolution when the time is right, but not now. You know what I mean? I mean, look at, the Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia being necessary for a secure state. We understand that. Our forefathers understood that. But, you know, for him to think that there's no process, and I think it's due to his Harvard education, and we know these guys that have been through schools and have been educated in these programs, which is basically, it's like Common Core, where, you know, they teach them how to think. And with his lawyer mind, he doesn't think, because he knows how evil they are. He thinks that there's no way that we can penetrate them with our pen. And he doesn't even understand what we know as far as common law goes. We have a lot of methodology for challenging them. And it's just because he doesn't know it, and he's got a certain intellectual pride that won't let him go there. You know? Look at every statute, every law that they put in, they're supposed to certify with the attorney general of the state that it's constitutional. Right there is a method of knocking them down every time, because they don't do it. So most of the time when they're coming after you for something, it's with some statute that hasn't been verified as constitutional. You know, and I don't know why somebody like Stuart Rhodes doesn't understand that. I mean, he should be out there making, look at, this is his group, and it's in Jersey, and it's a congressman. Where's his comment? You know what I'm saying? Somebody higher in the Oath Keepers needs to say, look at, first of all, what you're doing is you're doing character assassination, and you're accusing us of stuff that's dangerous. You're saying that we're extremists and we're terrorists. And meanwhile, like you pointed out, this guy's part of the CIA and all these ops. That's public knowledge. Everything you said is public knowledge. I mean, you talk about the pot calling the kettle black, you know?
So yeah, you know, it's kind of ironic that, you know, that the CIA is supposed to not be involved in domestic operations, you know, but what do you call that when they put all these people, former CIA, in positions of power?
Oh, they're involved, and they don't even have a charter. I don't even know if it's really a legal organization, to be, you know, from some of the stuff I've read, you know. I mean, where do they get their authority and their power? And you're right. Oh, so he's former. Well, based on his formerness, I didn't vote for either Bush because because of the whole CIA connection with them. I didn't trust them, and it turns out I was right, you know. And I was a conservative Republican, and I knew enough not to vote for them. Look, if you got somebody that's on the CFR, people know CFR is in the Trilateral Commission. You should know. You don't say, well, I'll vote for the lesser of the two evils. That is the evil, you know.
Right.
To me, it's a no-brainer, but other people don't understand, you know. And really, you know, your Committee of Safety, when you set these things up, these are conversations you could be having in your meetings. It's about educating people. You got a Committee of Correspondents. What you just did right there, you performed a duty of the Committee of Safety, Committee of Correspondents, responding to something stupid that they said. And let me tell you something. Those things, when they happen, I think they're great. I think they're great because they're goofy for you to go out there and punch. We should all be counterpunchers. Let them punch and come up with a left hook like that. Boom, because every time they do something, stupid. You know? Just like
right.
Just in the Bundy case, and asking Ammon, you know, oh, you sure you want to testify? And he says, well, I feel compelled to. And somebody coercing you? And I want a name who makes you feel like you have to testify. And he said, Anna Brown, it's you, Your Honor. I have to testify because you killed all my evidence. And the only way I can get it on the record is to testify. Well, she stuck her foot in her mouth, didn't she? And you can't miss these opportunities when they happen like that, you know? So they're gonna keep doing that. And you know, when you put something good out like that out, and you do it in a timely manner, it gives other people the courage to speak out too, you know.
Yep.
So anyway, that was pretty good, and we should be looking for that stuff, and I think it all needs to be responded to. We can't possibly respond to every stupid thing out there. However, the whole idea behind the committees of safety is you're responding to stuff on a local level where it matters to you. So this mattered to you, Terry. It's in your community, and it was very important. However, you know, there's a congressman involved. Congressman opens it up, that's now you're approaching a federal national scale. So, and he should not be made to feel gun-shy about that belonging. See, he needs to be educated. The fact that he wanted to apologize for it means that he needs some education, this guy, And what he needs to know is that every time they tell him somebody's connected with something that's subversive or what do they call it, radical? What was the word they used, Terry?
I'm not sure which one you heard.
Organization? When they say, I had no idea that it was with the Oath Keepers.
They call them extremists.
Extremists. Oh, an extremist. Boy, there's a term. So now, they went out and labeled everybody sovereign citizens, and so now the new one is you're an extremist, right?
Right.
So we have to address that, and they start coining these terms, and what I would do is I would say, this guy is an extremist, he's an extreme communist, how's that?
I think I'm going to give Scott Garrett a call tomorrow. I'm actually a campaign contributor of his. He actually advocated he told me personally that he wanted to abolish the Federal Reserve. But once he got into office, he started taking all kinds of campaign contributions from the banking sector, and that kind of went out the window. But he is pretty conservative.
That's how they work.
I know that.
Right, so you got to stay on him. And you know, if you had a committee of safety, you might actually be able to approach him with a group of six people, and it makes you have more clout. When he realizes you're a mover and shaker and talking to people, because ultimately, when it comes time for his reelections, I don't care who gives to his campaign funds and stuff. If he doesn't have local people voting for him, pulling his lever, and walking his petitions, guess what? He doesn't make it back in. And that's the power of people. In an honest election, anyway, the way it's supposed to work. We put congressmen in here, we put Gibson in, for better or for worse, but they didn't want him, and we forced him to carry his petitions. Like, it's the first thing he did when he signed the NDAA, and we got him to jump up and down they cut because he was a well-point graduate full bird colonel, and so they know that the military guys are trained in a certain mindset, so I think that they have a better time, they know where to go to control them. And the way they got him to sign the NDAA was by telling him that, it's an appropriations bill, and if you don't sign it, we got all these troops over there in Afghanistan and over there, and they'll get no paychecks. I mean, if you believe that crap, I said, good, don't give them paychecks, we'll take them home where they belong. And have them protect us, I said, I can't believe you fell for that. But you know what happened the next year? He didn't sign it. So because he got such flack from we the people in his local. See, they're concerned about their local constituents because that's who keeps them in office, So that part of politics still works, the local level. They still have to get that local stuff going on,
Think this is positive publicity for the Oath Keepers.
Absolutely. It's everything they do, you have to say, you got to be just like them. How can we use this to our advantage? And it's getting so stupid out there, and people are waking up. That's what I'm talking about when I said the time is right and timing. The more they do like that, the better it is for us. We can respond to anything they say right now. Because all the bullshit that they gave everybody that wasn't true, people are finally realizing it's all bullcrap, right?
Yep.
Excuse my French. I gotta let that bull stuff go every now and then because I get very worked up here with these guys. but you're right. This is positive. Look, I talk sometimes about I I was intimate in the Al Sharpton. Everybody knows who Al Sharpton is, for better or for worse. But, you know, he was a nobody, and he's really, you know, he's still a nobody as far as I'm concerned. But there was a guy that took bad press and built a legacy on it. The guy, you know, it was his Tawana Brawley days over in Poughkeepsie. I was there. I saw it. You know, when they framed the car, and this black girl made all these accusations that turned out to be false, you know, and ruining people, having them suspended and arrested and all this stuff. And Al Sharpton was right there with her, encouraging her, coaching her and all that. And it was all a lie. It was all a lie. And so he had a lot of bad press, but he used that bad press. As long as he was in the media, he was able to influence people, so to speak. He was able to have a bully pulpit, and he used it. I don't know if he did it on his own or he had somebody that was smart, some kind of communist subversive that knows how to use the news media.
Yeah, he was working with that guy, Alton Maddox, a lawyer, who was subsequently disbarred.
Oh, look, you talk about a criminal crew. My goodness. It was horrible. But, you know, the damage was done, and he went on to what he went on to his claim to fame, you know. And he became a figure. You know? I mean, some people, you know, look, you can become a figure whether you're notorious or everybody loves you. Either way, you're a figure, right? And he was happy to do it either way. And then, of course, he branched off and tried to get himself some credibility, because at that point, you know, once you have the microphone and you have the bully pulpit, you know, there's a lot of things you can do. I mean, that's half the battle, right? You can get your voice out there, right?
Yep.
So these are all lessons that we need to learn. And, I mean, everybody's, oh, I don't play politics. Well, only you play politics. What, this is, it's not that we're playing power, we're enforcing the Constitution on the politicians. And in order to make some statements that are going to seem political, look at, they're fundamental. That's where we go. We go to the fundamental principles. If we're going to play politics, we rest in the fundamentals. They can't argue them. They can't. Just like you did when you went towards the right to the heart of the matter, the CIA, the subversive crap that's going on, they can't answer that. You know, that was very good. I mean, he's not going to be very happy, but that, I think you opened up a dialogue. Now, somebody else from the Oath Keepers should supplement that and bolster that and add to that, you know? It's an open door, you know?
That's a good idea. I mean, I'm not a member of Oath Keepers, but I think I may just join up and, you know, talk to this guy about this situation.
Yep. Look, it's better that you weren't a member. So, because you're not a member teaming in, it's like, I'll tell you, I'm not telling you not to join, because I joined them because I thought they were a good organization, which they are. The whole idea is good. But we wanted to team up with Chris and Ann, and we couldn't get together. And there was a lot of information about us, too. We were a subversive organization. And I think she was a little afraid, and somebody held her feet to the fire, and she said, I haven't vetted them. But meanwhile, an article came out, and they used something we wrote and something she wrote, and they said, look it, here's two entities, two people that have followings, that have influence, and they're not affiliated in any way, and they're saying the same thing. They held her up, and they held NLA up, and they said, look it, here's two different people saying the same things. You see what I'm saying? It was better that you're not a member defending the Oath Keepers in that respect, I think, you know? Which means you don't have any biases, you know.
They put a big bomb on the land.
So anyway, I that's pretty good. Keep it going and like you know, use, get your juices flowing. Like you said, get somebody else from the Oath Keepers to respond to that, you know.
Okay.
And we have other, there's lots of NLA members that are Oath Keepers, you know, or vice versa, however you want to think about it. And you know, Stuart Rhodes hasn't said he does with the NLA. He hasn't told his member, he's not doing something that stupid, you know what I mean? He hasn't said anything, and so that's good. You know, we have John Wallace up here as a big oath keeper, very good guy with a radio station, retired state trooper. I mean, he's the oath keeper's oath keeper, you know what I mean? So he's a good one. There's lots of good people on the oath keepers. I think it was an idea whose time had come. It really is. And to call them a subversive organization, you know, I mean, they said the Oath Keepers have connections with subversive organizations, or they are a subversive organization. You know, they have to be very careful when they say this stuff, because they're opening themselves for lawsuits, too, I think.
Well, here's an interesting quote. It says, we're not saying all Oath Keepers are domestic terrorists. This is their spokesman. Raphael said. So apparently they're calling some Oath Keepers terrorists. And they, you know, but they have no evidence to support that allegation.
I would say, and we're not calling all CIA members terrorists either.
Right.
But many of them are, especially in the upper ranks like you, sir. Right?
Right.
We're not calling all the CIA agents, you know, a piece of garbage. But many
right.
of them are, and especially ones made it to the top ranks. We know there's a lot of lower guys down there that still believe in the United States of America and the Constitution and Grandma and Apple Pie, unlike you.
Well, here's the other interesting thing about that article. Stephanie Raphael, a spokeswoman for the State Homeland Security Office, said the people in Oath Keepers nationally have said violence against the government is justified, but the state is not saying that true for everyone in the group. You know, I think that the Oath Keepers have to respond to this. Otherwise, you know, they're not worth a
serious allegation. Exactly.
Absolutely.
If they said that about us, you think we would sit here? Matter of fact, you know, I think we would put a paper in the court on some that rank, you know. They're very careful about the way they talk about us because they understand that we'll hold their feet to the fire, you know.
I know.
Because we'll respond with a paper. We'll respond in a lawsuit, you know. And Stuart Rhodes, who is a Harvard-trained attorney, why isn't he suing them for defamation?
Good point.
You know what I mean? I mean, if anybody knows how to do it, he should. And if he doesn't, he's not worth it at all. I'm calling him out. You know?
Yeah, everybody should resign then from the Oath Keepers if he doesn't respond to this.
We should. You know, maybe this should be a subject of a Monday night call, a national call. I should pull you on, and we should bring this out to the national people. Since you know, I mean, we have representatives here from all over. People should get the word out with this. You know, let's put some pressure on Stuart Rhodes and his group. You know,
sounds good.
You're right. It needs to be responded to. I mean, I would not respond to it if it was me. Like you said, you wouldn't either, right?
Right.
Well, so that's good. See. It's ideas like that, you know, and just to get out and go to these meetings and, you know, look at, I think Oath meetings are good to show up at, and they're good to recruit Committee of Safety people. Look at if this Committee of Safety thing takes off and it hits every county, what do you think they're going to be saying about us? Seen the same crowd. Oh, the Committee of Safety, it's a subversive organization. The one problem they're going to have is we have evidence and we have history that shows that our forefathers were all our committees of safety. And I mean, I've seen the film where they were training Homeland Security people and they didn't break any bones about calling our forefathers terrorists. Identifying, they said, oh, look, they had the Boston Tea Party. That was a terrorist activity. I mean, training these guys that our forefathers were terrorists against England, you know. And, you know, freedom does terrorize tyrants. There's no doubt about it. So, they can say what they want. Anybody else have anything? It's 9:38. I don't know how many committees. I didn't get on to see what we got listed for committees of safety or anybody that needs any help that we could maybe.
Gerard, could you give us an update on the money, on the currency?
Oh, on the currency, I'll be honest with you, I went in to do some research today, and I was so busy, I didn't get anything done, you know, as far as looking at what's going on. But there's a
maybe
lot of stuff
week.
Moving there, you know. Yeah. So I haven't heard anything, you know, terrible or anything like that, you know, any kind of major movements, which I don't expect there will be, because see, the whole idea is to keep it quiet, keep it sustained as long as they can. You know, and look at if we're successful, we should be able to keep it from ever crashing. You know what I mean? If we can get our business back up and people productive and factories going and local currency and stuff. That puts faith and credit in the American dollar, because it's about the American people ultimately, right?
Okay, thank you.
I haven't heard of any. You know, look at the first thing that we're worried about is when the money doesn't bring, when they can't exchange it, and the goods start not flowing. That's what you got to watch for. Shortages.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Things like that. That's what I worry about, and that's what I look for. For it in the international markets first, because of what do we get from out of this country, you know? I mean, we do have a lot of oil and gas. We probably could sustain ourselves if we wanted to, you know, with the oil and gas that's just from here, although they claim that we get a lot of our stuff from imports, and I think that's by design, not necessarily by necessity, you know what I mean? But I would look, a lot of our foods recently are coming from all over and not America, and so I would look at prices of food and things like you know, groceries and goods and services not being delivered and making excuses. So I don't know if anybody has heard any more on the supposed gas shortages in the seven states in the South there. That they claim that the pipeline broke, and I suspect, I had a suspicion that maybe that was the beginning. See, that's the type of thing you're going to see. They're going to say one thing, you know, and it's going to be something else, and they're going to try to tell you, oh, we got a broken pipeline, and all of a sudden the seven states can't get gas. You know what I mean? Sounds suspicious, you know. There was no fire, no explosion, nobody knows nothing. You lost, I don't know how many 100,000 gallons of gasoline or oil. That should be a major environmental disaster if all that oil went in the ground. Where is it? Gasoline.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They make stupid statements in the paper, and we sit there and we listen to them. Hey, look at you put a couple 100,000 or a million gallons of gasoline into the aquifer. What do you think's going to happen? I didn't hear anything blowing up. I didn't hear people getting sick or anything else like that. So, as far as I'm concerned, it's a lie. You know.
Yeah.
Unless they could show me. So that's what you got to look for. You got to always read between the lines with them, because that's how they operate. You know,
okay.
By the time it hits NBC and CBS, by the time it hits them, it's already late. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So,
it's over.
It's over, right? So get your rice and beans now. Don't wait for the dollar to crash. Do it now. They're not going to go bad. You rotate them. You're always going to eat them. You know, look at there's nothing wrong with stockpiling. Our government tells us that we're supposed to have bug out bags in 3 or 4 days, and can't. You go on the federal sites and they tell you this. And why do they tell us this? They tell us this because they have an obligation to, because if something does happen, they could be held responsible. Why didn't you tell us? So now they can go to where they did tell us. On one hand, they tell us what to do, and on the other hand, they call us terrorists if we do it. Imagine that.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, that's the deal. I haven't seen anything, but believe me, if I get a piece of information where it looks like something's going on, I will relay it to NLA first and foremost.
Okay.
I mean, if we'll be watching, and we should all, look at, we're all awake. I hope we all are. I believe we are, you know. So, and that's where, if anybody else, because look, at we have a presence all across the United States. So when somebody sees something someplace else, they can alert us. You know, I mean, that's another place that they're having trouble, you know. And when they do false flag stuff, everybody's got little iPhones and cameras, and they're taping things, and it's very hard for them to get away with stuff today. You know, a lot of times the false flag is broken because people are taping, you know, who's actually doing the thing, you know. So important that we keep our eyes open and get the word out of things that we know or things that we see. Again, that's almost a peripheral job of your committees of safety, which are people in your community meeting, getting together, and talking about local issues. You know, I mean, if you had committees of safety in those communities that they claim that the pipeline broke, And it dumped all this gasoline, we could immediately make contact with those people and find out if it was true or false. If there was any, I don't think it was true because I didn't hear anything. And you know, they never waste a disaster. You know that. You know, if they spilled 100 gallons of fuel, you know, they would have turned it into 100,000. They would have closed things down. They would have made a big deal out of it because they never want to waste a disaster, natural or man-made. That's their MO. We know that's their MO. And that's the other thing you got to be looking for, you know, as you're forming these committees of safety. Don't put up with them calling you a subversive organization or anything like that. And, you know, when we run across stuff, we should be blowing the whistle in our communities and sending the word down the line. Our committees of correspondence are about taking, like what Terry did. Oh, there was a group, this, that. That should get disseminated amongst us so that we all can keep current, because you can't listen to CNN and keep current, you know. The only thing you could do by listening to CNN is keep programmed. They just keep programming us, you know. So, anyway, it's we got like 15 minutes more, and I don't if anybody else have anything, you know, as far as forming the committees of safety,
right?
Don't forget the ham radio stuff. It's a good way to get in and form committees of safety. Yeah, who said something?
You're right, it's me, Ron.
That's Jan.
Ron.
Yes, Ron.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up the formation of committees of safety and something you discussed last week regarding the militias and the enemies domestic. And our responsibility in that regard to protect the law as jurist in the jury box. And I wanted to call everybody's attention to the fact that we now have a, under the COS tab, we now have a COS flyer number 2, which I feel we can use as a part of a promotional. If we want to have a committee of safety, we can use that flyer or handout, whatever you want to call it, that has to do with the militia, and we could use that maybe with a cover page. Say we wanted to have a meeting at the library on the 20th of the month, then we could hit all the gun stores or the shooting galleries or these NRA people in the area or the militias in the area or the fire departments in the area, the rescue people in the area, and give your contact information, give them this flyer, and tell them when the meeting is going to be. Those are the people that are already in the protection mode that are that could be members of the Committee of Safety. And so this would be a good education for them and point them to the Committee of Safety. And it could also be a handout at the Committee of Safety meeting itself. And once you get through the actual presentation of the video and you go to Q&A, then it's something you could maybe educate them further on that flyer and why you handed it out in the first place.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we squandered a lot of opportunity not that we squandered it, it's just that there's your gun groups get tunnel vision. and they only take care of Second Amendment issues, not realizing that some of these other issues, not the Common Core, the one they use for zoning and that, and the community is all connected. You know what I'm talking
about. Agenda 21?
The Agenda 21
right.
directly affects the Second Amendment stuff. And the Second right. Amendment people get such tunnel vision, all they think they want to do is preserve their shooting range and their turkey hunts. And so I thought it was a very ingenious thing to approach the gun people and in a very low kind of voice to start out, is make them realize that, look, the Second Amendment is not just about hunting. It's about protecting the nation from enemies, domestic, and foreign.
Right.
It's not just foreign and domestic, but that there are actual militia clauses in the Constitution, and whether you know it or not, you're fulfilling two of them. Hello? And then tell them what they are. And gradually
right.
break them into this. The only thing that I'm a little worried about is you can't say militia up front. We haven't got that. Look, a year ago, you couldn't even say the term. We just said it how many times on this show. Now, you know that carnivore and the NSA thing. Meh. Well, they're so clogged up now, I don't even know if it works anymore, to tell you the truth, because everybody's out there. But you know what I'm saying? It was like you would never get somebody who's in an organized militia or even eating in that.
You're breaking up. You're breaking up, George.
Yeah, my internet. I'm sorry.
It's up to NLA as educational facilitators to bring this point to the forefront that everybody between the ages of 17 and 45 is the militia. They're not skinheads. There's organized militia and there's unorganized militia. And
right.
and we need to call out to their attention who is what and who is not what, and define our terms. So when they use their terms, then we have to ask them, well, how do you define your term? This is the way we defined our terms as what is the militia. How do you define your militia? You know what I'm saying? In other words, we clarify.
We are militiamen.
Yeah.
I said we don't need to call militiamen to the meeting. That's a buzzword.
We can call the hunters to the meeting.
Militiamen. You have a rifle, you're an adult male, guess what? You're a militia.
Yeah.
We'll
yeah.
call you a patriot.
Yeah. Yeah,
you have
the patriot and the hunters.
Yeah.
That's what we call them. Yeah,
right, right. And you make and ultimately, when you get activated, you're going to make the biggest armed army in the world. That's the
right.
point.
That's right.
You know, and not only is it the point for these people, this is the point for the government. They see this. I mean, I think these people are that ignorant. They don't realize what they're up against. They keep saying, you know your enemy. You know your enemy. I don't think they know who their enemy. If we're they don't even know who we are. No idea what we're capable of. You know what I mean? What the extent of our knowledges and our determination and our abilities, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine anybody sitting in the government wanting to take on the American people. I mean, they should be. I mean, I know we've been dumbed down and we're not as smart, but we still something in us, and especially those of us who have kept ourselves materialistic in the world and that are living, you know, out there making a living every day, you know, you almost have to be self-sufficient to survive in a vast economy, you know. It takes a lot of savvy to keep going today and to go up against the people that are actually holding this country together, who are armed and intelligent and all walks of life. I mean, this thing that's coming, it's going to be good for us. I started to allude to that, you know, when Obama was running for president, I was so sick of the lie. I knew 9/11 was a put-up deal and all that. I mean, I was living with that. My stomach was turning. And when Obama was coming in, and I knew he was a smooth talker, and I knew he was no good. And I said, I hope he gets elected. And people looked at me, and they said, what are you, crazy? I said, yeah, so all you Republicans and you rhinos that are sitting there wringing your hands going, what are we going to do if Obama gets a lamp. But guess what? Now you got to figure it out, don't you? He did more to motivate than anybody else.
Sure,
because he was so radical and he was so fast, he woke everybody up. And so that's not going to stop happening. That's going to keep on happening. It happened with the governor of this state. He, you know, he created such a backlash that he never expected. He really didn't know his enemy, and they don't. You know, they're arrogant, and true of being arrogant, in order to be that arrogant, you have ignorance. You know what I'm saying? It takes an ignorance to be that arrogant, you know? You have to have a little bit of invincible ignorance or something to not understand that, you know, you're the guy standing there with the match in a puddle of gasoline that you're going to light, you know, and burn yourself up first. So, look, this everything is connected to everything else. You're the safety and all this connected to what's going on in the society today. And it's a methodology for us to put something in place that will rise above the chaos or prevent the chaos to begin with. You know, I mean, there's a lot, you know, it's a shame that they're able to use the police to create such chaos out there. You know, that's a shame because a lot of police officers, I know some of them personally, they really are trying to make a difference. But I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to be a cop today. They're so jaded. It's so hard. I wouldn't want to do it, you know. And a lot of the chaos that's going on is because law enforcement is playing into their hands. And they have no shortage of dupes that are willing to go out there and shoot somebody just because they want to be a cowboy, you know. And all you need is a few of them to happen in diverse places here and there. And then what do you got? You got chaos throughout the nation, right? And they know how to use that. So the Committee of Safety is the counter to all that. The fact that we're going to be in every county, the fact that we're going to be local, the fact that when locally we could slap it just like Terry did in New Jersey, and now he's going to slap it again. There's offshoots from that. You know, this is about counterpunching. It really is. It's very hard to make the first. You know, I was in martial arts for a lot of years, and when you get up there and you're sparring with something, whatever, you know, the guy that makes the first move potentially makes the first mistake. Right? You're going to make a first move, they better be a good move. So when they make a move and they stick their foot in their mouth, boy, you better be there to shove it all the way down their throat. You know what I mean? So does anybody have anything else to end or close it? I haven't heard
I wanted to say
here. No. Yeah.
That's COS.
Go ahead.
Excuse me. COS flyer number 2 on the COS page. That flyer there. There may be a false flag going out right now that you should be aware of. They had it on the ticker tape on the news tonight about the some Afghanistan supposedly vetted Syrian troops or Afghanistan troops that were being trained on the bases and several forts or bases. I'm not sure what. Anyway, they were supposed to be trained. We were training them so they could go back over there and actually fight. And the ticker tip says they vanish. Now, what does that mean? I don't know. But that sounds like heads up on that one.
That means they're in the community near you. Hello?
Yeah.
Do we need
committees
a good ticker tape? Well, gee, I don't know. We got these vanished Qaeda, whatever you call them, that you created and trained, and they vanished. What does that mean? That means
exactly.
You better have your gun on them, right? Oh, you're radical. You're over the top, right? Yeah, okay.
All the guys with all the cameras, and they vanished, right?
Even if that's state terror propaganda, it's still a crime to yell fire in a theater. This is Harley from Vermont.
I'm sorry, Harley. You're kind of breaking up here.
Oh, saying even if it's state terror propaganda, it's still the equivalent of yelling fire in a theater. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, I'm having a hard time hearing, I think I don't know if it's you or me. I'm breaking up here.
There was one interesting thing that showed up late today, and I'm not sure if it's true or not. I know you've probably all been wondering if WikiLeaks was going to leak this horrific stuff about Ms. Clinton. It was scheduled to go down Tuesday, and then it was rescheduled for Wednesday, and it was scheduled to go off at 3 in the morning on Wednesday. And apparently at 3 in the morning on Wednesday, guess what? The whole system went down. The internet went down. Apparently the cabal got so shook up they shut it down. So the rumor is that they found out who did it, and so they can roll these people up, and they're in the process of collecting now.
Stork them, man. Stork them back. The internet leaves tracks. That's the wonderful thing.
Exactly. So they've got going to do something to them.
Cowabunga.
I hope it's true.
What are you saying? They're going after the WikiLeaks people?
No. That was all a scam by WikiLeaks working with the good guys to set it up so that the cabal thought that they were going to announce all this horrific stuff about Hillary. And at 3 o'clock in the morning. So they shut down the internet at 3 o'clock in the morning. So we found out who did it. So we can go after them, the cabal people.
Oh, so they left the track. I know.
Yes. They
turned their hand. Yeah. Well, I rest my case. Everything I just said about us being the most technologically and determined and all that other stuff, there's the proof of the pudding right there, that type of stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
And nobody was the wiser because they shut it down at 3 in the morning. Who's on at 3 o'clock in the morning in this country? Not many.
Right. They even planned the time to make it easier for them
right.
to track them.
That's right. There wasn't any traffic.
And they bit into it hook, line, and sinker, huh?
Oh, I know what.
Wow.
Sorry to break in. I was wondering if anybody had any update that makes sense of what's going out in Oregon in case. Anybody here more informed than me?
Say that.
Anybody on here know anything about the Oregon case better than me? I don't. I think we're all afraid now.
Information out there. Ammon was testifying today, and he keeps getting stalled by Anna and Brown, I guess. Is Ann Brown? And I think it was yesterday, she got so wrapped around the axle that she sustained an objection when she realized nobody had objected to anything. And because she's so used to it, that she said, well, I sustained it anyway and went on, you know, with egg on her face.
I sustained an extra one.
I entered something.
Well, Your Honor, I object just in case. I object
yep,
for your next
exactly. I don't care what you say next, I object.
Object. Even though you didn't say anything, just put it in your pocket for, I know you're going to do it again in 5 minutes.
Right.
She sustained an objection before she even heard the objection. But there's three names that I know. There's a John Lamb on Facebook. There's Kelly Stewart on Facebook. And then on one of the sites, there's a Sherry something. I'll have to look that one up. That she gave a whole report for last week. And I think her name's Doyle or something like that. I can't remember at the moment. So those three are the ones that I get my information from.
Yeah. Sherry is a Redoubt News reporter.
That's it. Yes, that one.
Dovale, D-O-V-A-L-E, Dovale?
Yeah.
I don't know how she pronounces it. Yesterday, they took Kelly Stewart as she was leaving the courtroom during a break, and Marshall marched her down this corridor, another one ahead and another one behind, and cornered her down around the corner and started giving her grief about some postings that she had made on Facebook. Intimidation sort of thing, you know, and she said she wasn't aware of anything that was outside of what she should be talking about, and that she had made some comments about the jurists or what they said and so on, and proceeded on for 10 or 15 minutes. Now, that's up on Facebook if you want to take a look at that and take a listen. Direct intimidation. One young woman and three big marshals, you know?
Yeah, but they're messing with the wrong person.
I know.
Let me tell you why. You know, I mean, look, she might be scared, but she's not. You know, that girl's going to do the right thing to the head. You know? All they're going to do is make her more determined, you know?
Right.
And, you know, they never give their names, you know that.
Right.
I mean, you know, I would refuse to talk to them if they wouldn't give me their name and badge number and their supervisor. And then if they continued, I would say, look, I'd yell rape or something, call the police. I don't know who these guys are. They won't identify themselves. They could be rapists for all I know.
She knew this marshal. She had talked to him a number of times. I don't know if she knew him by name. She wasn't sure if he was just a federal whatever. Mercenary or whatever you want to call them, or actually a federal marshal.
Mm-hmm.
But she knows them by sight and so on, so there's that. And
well, you know, the more they do that stuff, the more mistakes they're going to make. It's a mistake for them to be doing that, because all they do is expose themselves more and more, you know. I mean, well, you ain't going to go after a mother of six kids, a farm woman of six kids. I mean,
don't give them any ideas.
Well, let me tell you what, Kelly's got a lot of people that support her. She's not the right one for them to poke at, you know.
No.
A can of worms, a bee's nest there.
It's that kind of like little bit of negative attention the wrong way gets them, you know, a whole debate that they could have kept snuffed. They're dumb that way, but that's, they don't have a sense of humor or irony or anything.
And they don't know their enemy. But look, that's a lesson to everybody, that these guys seriously, seriously troll Facebook. They're looking at Facebook all the time. You know, I mean, they probably grew up with Facebook, so they're comfortable with it. But even in the Bundy thing over there in Nevada, all that evidence was off of Facebook, wasn't it? They were using Facebook as evidence.
Yeah. But everything I put on is immediately in their face, and I'll call them out, and I'll say, you know, you Porsche Masons and you CIA trolls and you data mules and all you guys, you know, here it is. This is what we're talking about today, you know. It's like, hi. You know, I don't care. I mean, everything we do is out in the open, and everything they do is hidden, and they're the cockroaches who run, you know. So, yeah. Let the truth set them free, too, if they're, you know, mine my data. I got nice pictures up that are just going to make them squirm, so.
No, go ahead.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Gerard. I was wondering how John is doing. I haven't heard from him in a couple of weeks.
Not good. Not good yet. He's still in the woods. He's supposed to go up and get some tests tomorrow. He really... You know, he thought it would blow over, and it's not. So now he has to go and do some testing, you know, get some kind of a diagnosis as to what his problem is, you know. So we'll know more after tomorrow or the next day. He's supposed to be going to check himself in to get checked out.
Okay, thank you for the report. I think there's a bunch of real tough bugs out there infecting us.
Yeah, I mean, this is strange what he has, because it's like, it's very nondescript, and it just leaves him played out, but it's like, you know, it doesn't have a lot of symptoms, not a lot of pain, just like, you know, you can't sleep, and you sweat, and then you wake up, and you have no energy, and, you know, you can't really say it's a flu. I'm sure, you know, my wife got bit by something, and the doctor thought it was a spider, but it took her out for 2 months. Bad. Really, I was surprised that, you know, you could get so sick. I didn't know we had anything around here that would do that to you. But just think about it. There's probably bugs we don't even know about. They haven't cataloged every bug, you know, because there's so many millions of them. But you get bit by things, and spiders seem to be particularly insidious as far as putting a poison in that has effects weeks and weeks and weeks and months later, you know. So... just got to be careful. You know, John did tell me he had a bite on his ankle. He didn't know what it was. And I said, you know, I asked him if it got a rash. Nah, it's red. It's still there. He said, it only hurts if I touch it. And I said, well, if you got a bite a month and a half ago and it still hurts if you touch it, that isn't good. You know?
Yep.
So anyway, hopefully they'll figure it out. Hopefully it's something, you know, that we can get a handle on. But, you know, it's hard to treat something even holistically if you don't know, if you don't have a diagnosis, you know. You know, if you don't know if
it's
bloodborne or...
I'll send up a prayer for his benefit. Thank you for the report.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And look, you know, sometimes it's something stupid. Like, sometimes you could be... just have a potassium deficiency or something. I mean, that can kill you. Your heart can stop. I mean, it happens all the time. So, you know, sometimes the basic things are what gets you down, you know. So hopefully he gets a blood test tomorrow and they'll see something that's off the thing. And if that's the case, generally speaking, that rectifies really fast. You know what I mean? So,
yep.
Anyway, we appreciate your prayers because right now, he could use them, and we could use him. There's stuff that really we've been holding off putting out until he can massage him a little bit. I hate sending stuff out without, you know, sending it past him. And, you know, we have a certain procedure. Things go and get written, drafted, and then we go over them, and then we approve them. And I hate to leave him out of that. I haven't done that before. But we're getting to the point that some of this stuff has to go out, you know, so... I'm hoping he gets back here better so that, you know, we can, I mean, not that we can't continue without him. I just feel like, you know, once you got a team going and you got a certain tenor and quality and tone to the work, you know, I guess we're going to find out if we're ready. I guess that's what this is going to steal us to make us know, you know, that we can operate. If one of us is taken out, we can still do what we need to do. You know what I mean?
Yep. I appreciate listening to you, Gerard. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. I don't know. My disclaimer is I just know enough to make me dangerous. So just the information at your own risk. Okay. I'm not practicing law or giving legal advice either.
Exactly.
If you're doing roads, guess what?
Well,
you should listen.
I think we need to make a good clarification on that, because all the sort of stuff I found on Next Friend and whatnot in Vermont was sort of pejorative, like you had to be kind of invalided or, you know, in some way inferior, minor, incapacitated. Do you get the following?
Well, that's because they statutorized it. That's because they, you know, it was something that was always there. So now they want to take and make it statutory. So now they say, well, you know, if you have a next friend, it's because you're incompetent or whatever, right?
I want to put in for co-counsel or a second or a right to have a clerk or, you know, whatever. But I think it's a point of clarification because, you know, just like at the opposite end, you know, we should have a lawyer recovery and amnesty program, you know, like come join the real fight and get out of that evil trade with those witches, right, in the black clothing,
right,
discussing
right.
All that. So, you know, I'm just saying that that's something I'm right on right now, that and picking juries, like the strategy behind asking questions in a certain way and, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, we do have some stuff up and coming that's going to break open. We do have people that were in the law trade, in the bar, that have left the bar for one reason or another, and they're coming, and the time is right for them to help us, because they were bar lawyers and they understand all the places that the bar is weak, because they are. There's places that they're very weak, and this whole business, like what you're talking about with Next Friend. Matter of fact, I'm going to ask a particular member, I don't want to give his name right now, that's working with a ex-lawyer that understands all the ins and outs, you know, about that whole assistance of counsel and Next Friend thing, and see what the bar attorney attitude towards that is. You know, I mean, even if he doesn't have an answer, he can give us the attorney's, you know, knowing what an attorney would say, having an honest answer from an honest attorney that's been in the trenches is invaluable. Yeah. And we're starting.
You're definitely, you're definitely always the odd duck if you're the pro se case. They move you to the beginning or the end or, you know, impropria persona, whatever you want to call it. I don't like calling it anything because it still feels like the fiction, you know, in Latin. And I'm claiming that they have to translate any of their Latin in their other words for me because I'm going to speak in the common language. And I got all this stuff in the previous, recorded transcripts, right? You know, it's like, and so I'm just so friggin' tired. You know, it's just so tiring that they just keep doing it and just conning people into contract over and over again.
Yeah, well, that's coming to an end as people wake up, you know, and when you learn how to challenge their jurisdiction and their authority to do that, and there is a way to do it, but you got to, you know, you have to be able to dance the dance, and we're right. Actually getting, look at, you're getting better, we're getting better. And the reason they don't like a pro se is because, look at you, as long as you're objecting and you're out there and you're punching and you're counterpunching, at the end of the day, the judges feel, you know, there is an unwritten thing. Well, actually, it is written that says that, you know, if you don't have an attorney, it's on his shoulders to keep them from taking advantage of you as a person who's not an attorney. And I've had judges tell me, you know, you can't depend on the other attorneys and this and that. And I didn't know too much back then, but I would have said, no, Your Honor, but I'm depending on you to make sure that you don't let them take advantage of me unfairly because they're going to pull some kind of scam.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because they can be technically accurate and morally wrong all day long. That's their business.
Right. And the thing is that judges know that there's a wide open door for a mistrial. If you go through and you fail as a pro se, and then you say, well, the judge didn't protect me because the attorney did this, this, and that, and that was an obvious scam, and he should have said something. You know, these judges, they don't want anything on their shoulders. They want a 1,000,000% immunity in every aspect. And when you come in as a pro se, you're already cutting a wedge into their armor right there because he can't control you. He has a responsibility to you at that point. You see, when you have a lawyer, he's not really responsible to you at all, hardly, right? It's the lawyers there. You had representation, after all.
Well, I'll just say they're prickly on all sides, and one of the big reasons is they don't want a whole crowd of people picking up on the same information, you know, because, you know, they don't even want you to mingle with the hoi polloi, right? Because they've already got them, you know, they're hoping you're going to expedite out with a quick piece of paper, you know what I mean? And really, the place is just, the whole dance is about what, you know, the clerk really controls the dance, like who holds the paperwork. Judge just says up or down on this person or that person's paperwork, pass over and signs it. What I'm getting is really you're fighting over what goes in the permanent record that day and who has a right to grab what property at the end of it, I guess, right?
Well, look at the truth of the matter is there's a process and a procedure, and it's called due process, and they really don't have the right to make a decision on it. It's already written in stone. And you see, they break their own codes and statutes when they mess with the record and they don't have it. And for some reason, well, I know the reason, they don't have any problem messing with the record because there's no consequences for them ever. They've been doing it for years, you know? And so now it's up to us to make consequences.
The clerk has something to be concerned about, especially if you've been inventing fictions that are based on hearsay.
Yeah. Look, a clerk is as powerful as the judge is, and in some instances even more powerful if you really understand what their job is. You know what I mean? Look, this whole thing, this whole country was set up on separation of powers. You know, a clerk is not just a neutered thing standing there, you know what I mean? They have certain duties and responsibilities, and they have certain authority. And when you get a stamp from a notary and a clerk, and then you apostille it or you certify it, There isn't a court in the country that can go against that. That holds up internationally. Because look, if we can't, if our legal documents, when they put, just think about this, the clerk is the recorder of deeds, properties. If that process isn't pristine, it even affects us outside our borders when people come in. We have to have a process that the whole world accepts, as they do too, because if we're going to do business together, we have to trust each other's process, right?
That's where you see comes in too.
Right, but the thing is if they're going to play around with the record, whether it's UCC or whatever, look, these things have already been laid out hundreds of years, right? Because if they weren't, there wouldn't have been a whole lot of business going on between us and them, right?
Right, but it's always, like you say, it's a jurisdiction question whether you're going to go forward in the common law of the land or the law of the city, the law of the sea, or there's even a final one of the law of the air. You know, it's relative to the people you have in the court. And, you know, it is important for us to be able to pick jurors, to be able to pick who our peers are and who's going to understand at a certain level, because we're headed for committees of safety. Why? So we can inflict punishment on wrongdoers and prevent wrongdoing and get on with our lives. And to do that, you need a fair court. So you need to be able to assemble people for jury duty and know that they're capable. You know?
And that's a good point. Again, now you got back to the committees of safety facilitating a free and unfettered jury. And it all goes hand in hand, doesn't it?
Only when you have all that paperwork done and all those people to stand behind that paperwork, when you walk to the next council meeting with your council, you know, do you get anybody's attention?
Right.
And you say, this is the law we want carried out, not the bullshit you're shoving down our throats, stealing our kids and selling them off for people's playthings and poisoning us and doing all this other stuff. I'm sorry. You know,
yeah.
I hate to be the one saying it, but, you know, we know who the usual suspects are. You know what I mean? It's the Freemasons and the Jesuits and the bankers at the high elite, Zionists, and, you know, that's who it is. They're all colluding, and they've got their secret oaths, and they swear those oaths, and you know what I mean.
And then you have the mindless, useless minions on the bottom that just go along to get along for a paycheck, and they really don't know anything about anything, but they just do what they're told for their paychecks, and that's what keeps the system going, also. And that's why it was important for them to subvert the schools. So that people don't learn to think and ask questions. So they tell them to do something and they do it. You know, and you know, at some point, you know, as an adult and as a member of the community and an American, there's a duty to stand up for what's right. And well, what's right? Well, the law of the land, which is the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Well, if you don't know what it is, how could you stand up for it? That's what they've done to us, and that's what needs to be undone. And really, a committee of safety in your community is really the first step of amassing those people. And there's plenty of injured, walking wounded right now. That's why this is an idea whose time has come, because they're out there, and all you have to do is figure out how to approach them, just like Ron and I were talking about, approaching the gun people. And things are getting bad enough now that many people that wouldn't have listened to you, wouldn't have even considered what we were saying even a year ago, their ears are perking up now. I mean, you want be professional. You know what I mean? You want to be coherent.
Yeah.
But they're listening now.
Sorry, and I wanted to bring something from another call-in group I was in L.A. talking to and that really resonated. And I said, and they said, in a lot of these places, especially where they have some issues, you know, with the crime, and they already have committees of safety.
That's
They're just called
point.
Neighborhood Watch.
Right. That's a good point.
You think these guys aren't, like, aware and talking to each other and able to correspond as a safety committee would correspond? I mean, we have to look for similarities of echoing groups that will just help us add to our groups of groups, you know? tethered
you know,
them somehow in.
You just made a pretty good point. That little light bulb off of my head, and that's why these discussions can be good sometimes. Early on in our common law grand jury movement, when we were moving into set administrators and do common law grand juries, and we were moving paperwork through the courts, you know, using common law, there was a group of people that said, oh, no, no, you don't have the authority with the jury. It has to come from the prosecutor and this and that. Why don't you set up boards of review? And those were things that, like, communities will set up boards of review to placate the people when the cops get out of hand. So what they do is, like, a board of review is a punishment for a police force. If they take a board of review and stick it over top of a police station, at least, especially in the beginning, that board of review has a lot of authority, because the only reason they're there is because that means they've admitted that they have a problem. And they put a board of community members, maybe a pastor, maybe a fireman, some guy like Chris Breels, who was the county fire guy, you know, the safety guy, and they put people like that on boards of review. Well, we were like, absolutely not. We need the jury to grind there. We don't just need a board of review, because a board of review doesn't have real teeth. Yeah. They don't have to listen to it. But what we didn't realize is that, yeah, let's put boards of review in, on a specific subject, and then let's invite them and call them committees of safety. They can go to the police board of review, but in the meantime, they should be sitting on their local committee of safety. It's perfect. Any place, like you said, any place that has a board of review, they're doing a committee of safety function.
What's a board of review again?
What's that?
What's a board of review?
Well, a board of review is put in by a town, a municipality, or whatever, when they have a problem, like, let's say, I mean, the police come to mind, but it could be anybody. It could be any government department that has a problem. The people have a right, just like we have a right to do the grand jury, the common law grand jury. A board of review is a step away from a grand jury investigation. It's local people in the community watching and having access to, and having say over the leaders of that department, whether it's the police department or whether it's the water department, wherever there's a problem that you found some corruption that needs to be fixed, yet you don't want to stick the whole department in. And I do that. And basically, that's the grand jury. A grand jury doesn't have to indict. The other thing they used to do is they would write a prescription. And boy, they hated that. They had to get rid of that. I mean, there's whole articles about grand juries that came in and found something that didn't rise necessarily to the level that required an indictment or an accusation of breaking the law, but nevertheless was fugazi enough that they needed to be addressed. And so the grand jury would write a prescription and say, these are the weak areas you need to fix. And the grand jury has authority to write prescription. Think about it. They don't need to ask permission. If they were called in to investigate a certain department, treasurer's office, I don't know, tax office, whatever, and they got in there and they got looking at everything, and they said, this guy did something, but that's because she was ignorant. She didn't have enough training. So it wasn't really a crime, but it is a crime because, you know, it's the taxpayer's money and she's abusing people because she's stupid, right? So let's train her. So let's write a prescription. This person needs more training. What are they going to say? You can't do that? Because if they don't do it, the next thing that's going to happen is they are going to get an indictment, right? So it's a no-brainer that a grand jury should be able to write a prescription, because the whole idea is we the people as the stopgap. We don't just come in when there's blood in the street. We're going to try to prevent the murder, right? So anyway, you get the idea. Anyway, I don't want to hold. It's 10:30. I think we should probably end it if nobody has anything earth-shattering. Keep your eyes open. Keep in touch with everybody. It's about communication. Talk in your communities and let's talk amongst each other. Share ideas and let's get our feet on the road. There's lots of ideas on how to get in front of people and communicate with them. And so we have lots and lots of, you know, different things here that we've mentioned that we need to implement. not implement, that's the word. So if I'm going to go ahead and...
Flyers. Sorry.
Yeah. And let's keep going. Let's massage them. Let's go. And Terry from New Jersey, thank you. And follow up with us on that whole Oath Keepers thing. I think that's very important. And everybody else, take a lesson from that and get bolstered up with this stuff. And let's get it going in our own communities. You know, each community does something like that. And eventually we're connecting. Okay? I'm going to say goodnight to everybody if nobody else has anything. Going once, twice, three times. Okay, Jan, I think we